Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Chet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, a mafkid peirot etzel chaveiro, person deposited, left his peirot with an individual, afilu hein avudin, even if they are sustaining losses, lo yiga behen, you shouldn't touch them. Rashi says, ayidei achbarim or rikavon, whether it's through animals or through natural rot that happens to food that is stored. In either of these cases, the Tanakhama says, don't touch them at all. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Mukhran Bifnei Beitin. He does an official sale. He takes them to the Beitin and sells them in that official capacity. Because in that way, he's saving the Balim, the losses. All that will happen here is that the item will continue to rot, deteriorate at a faster and faster pace. If he doesn't sell them now, by the time the Balim get back, there won't be very much left that is worth anything. So my time up. What is the reason that the Tanakhama says that you should not touch them? Amar Rav Kahana, Adam rotze bekav shelo mitisha kavim shel chaveiro. Person prefers his own kav more than 9 kav from someone else. Rashi over here takes it very literally, meaning in terms of a multiple that a person's willing to lose 90% of that which he has in order to maintain 10% of his item vis-a-vis monetizing it and getting that 90% back. So that is a huge relationship. Rashi is influenced by the Gemara later on, which speaks about it in these terms, or asks a question in these terms. Rashi says the reason is, ayadei shamal behen, because he invested in them. He put his handiwork in there, he worked hard to bring about this produce, and therefore he has sentimental value in the produce, more than just the monetary value, as well as the fact that people feel like there's a brocha in that which they have produced, and that which is their own handiwork. That obviously would have nafkaminot, the way that Rashi is phrasing it, that Rashba already notes this, that this might only be true when it comes to produce that you created on your own, or you produced on your own. On the other hand, if you're dealing with items that he bought, maybe that would not be the case. Although, you could argue, and the Rashba knows this, in the other direction, which is, we also feel, or people might feel about investing or buying. Just like when you buy an etrog, you have a certain amount of vested sentiment in that etrog because you picked that etrog. Maybe too here with the produce. If he picked a certain produce, he has some connection to it. Although, again, you would see it much more or be more palatable with what Rashi suggests over here, which is the own handiwork of the individual. This is from his garden, from his field. He wants to maintain at least the produce that he gave him, even if it's sustaining losses versus just having the money that he can go and buy fruits and vegetables in the market. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar, Chayshinan Shema Asana Mafkid Truma Umaser Amkom Acher. Maybe the individual deposited here made them into Truma Umaser. So the assumption is, and Tosafot discusses it in this framework, is that he deposited Tevel with this individual. Then he utilized this Tevel to become Truma Umaser, an other Tevel that he has in his possession. The problem is, and Tosafot already notes this, is that you have a problem of shelo min ha-mukaf, which is generally you have to take off trumot ha-masrot from things that are adjacent, that are present. Here he's going to be taking off trumot ha-maser from something that's nowhere near where he is now. So Tosafot discusses the exceptions to that rule, Erev Shabbat and Yom Tov, right before Shabbat and Yom Tov, where you need to get the stuff done quickly, and you have no other choice, or in a case where it's a chaver, who knows that people might partake of the tevel that he has by him, and therefore he wants to rectify it, so he utilizes this to do that. So he'll do a smaller aveira, quote-unquote, to protect against the larger aveira. So there are situations in which shelo min ha-mukaf can be overridden, and so our assumption is, and Tosafot says this is a far-fetched assumption, that maybe he turned it into truma u-maaser. There are those who wanted to suggest that the mafkid made them into truma maser before he deposited them. And that's the chashash over here. The Ramban and others reject that as being the assumption. And again, later in the Gemara, it seems pretty clear that he made it into truma maser while it was in the hands of the nifkad. So here you have a machloket as to the reason why we don't want you touching the produce according to the Tanakhama. Either because a person would say bekav shelo yoter mitisha kabin, or because of the possibility that it is trumot and masrot now because he utilized it for his other tevel. Meitevei, we have a brayta. Mafkid perot etzel chaveiro, harizeh lo yiga behen, person who deposits produce with this individual, the shomer should not touch them. The fikach, therefore, balabait oseh otan truma maser amakom acher. He can make them into truma maser for something else because he knows they'll still be extant. So bishma Rav Kahana, according to Rav Kahana, this makes sense. Hainu diktani lefikach. It's giving you a result of the din. The din is don't touch it. Why can't you touch it? Because of the fact that a person would say bekav shelo yoter mitisha kabim shel acher. Therefore, the outcome of that is that the ba'alim, the mafkid, can utilize this for truma maser because he knows it's not going anywhere. It's not going to get moved. Elul Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, my lefikach. How can you say therefore? The way that Rav Nachman Yitzchak states it is the reason that we don't allow you to sell it is because you might make it into truma maser. Therefore, you can make it into truma maser. Doesn't make sense. It's almost circular in nature. Hachi kamar. Hashtadamur rabbanon lo nizavin. Once the rabbanon established that you may not sell it, dichai shinan, because we worry about the fact that you might make it into truma maser, lefikach balabait oseh otan truma maser amakom acher. Now you can for sure make it into truma maser because you know that it won't go away. It's not telling you that that is the aftermath, but it's telling you what the result of the situation is. The chashash is that you might have made it into truma maser. Once the chachamim then made that into a definitive law that you can't touch it because of that chashash, now the result of that is that you definitely can make it into truma maser because you know it'll be there. It's not going anywhere. Amar Rabbi Bechanan Rabbi Yochanan. Machloket b'kdei chesronan. That the machloket here is if they are at a normal rate of deterioration, which is going to be given to us or governed by the next Mishnah. Aval yoter mikdei chesronan. But if they are in an accelerated deterioration, divrei hakol mochran bebeitin. Everybody agrees you sell them in beitin. Ad Rav Nachman Yitzchak vaday pliga. He definitely argues on Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, who says that the reason here is that we worry about shumot or masrot. Ad Rav Kahana, milei mapliga. On Rav Kahana, it's not clear whether he argues. The problem being is, why should it matter the rate of deterioration if the reasons that we're giving are either he made it into Trumot or Masrot, which is the Gemara says he clearly argues on, or whether it's because the person wants their own stuff. If they want their own stuff, then it should be irrespective of the rate of deterioration. Especially since we said before that the ratio is, Rotzei Adam Bekav Shelo, that's a very wide range, and that wide range would be at a greater pace than normal deterioration. So Gemara says, Ki kamar Rav Kahana, maybe Rav Kahana's din is only true because they chesronan kamar, only when they're deteriorating at a regular pace. Vaha rutze bikav shelo mitisha kabim shel chaveiro kamar. Wait a minute, didn't you give us the ratio? That is, he'd rather one of his than nine of someone else's. That is a rate of deterioration that far exceeds the normal deterioration of these items. And so therefore, it seems like it's irrespective of how fast they are deteriorating. Where it says, guzma bi'alma, that is an exaggeration, which is, it's a terminology that's used by the Gemara. You remember in the Gemara in Kiddushin, it goes through a series of these, which is, Hashem granted 10 kabim of something to the world, 9 kabim went to this, and 1 kab to everyone else. It's a derech of guzma. It doesn't mean literally. It just means that these people have that character trait, or a lot of that character trait, or it's manifest in them. It's not that there's an exact ratio of 9 to 1. And same thing over here. When they're saying 9 to 1, that's not literally. By the way, that's why Rashi took it literally when he described it before, is because here the Gemara at first assumes that it's literal. Only then rejects it and says guzma ba'alma. Tosfot over here says, where is the threshold? How do you know that something's deteriorating faster than the normal pace? It's very hard to determine. Is there some sort of mashahu? On this side, it's okay. On that side, it's not okay. Right. So that the Mishnah will already address. When you're dealing with different types of produce, there's clearly a different rate of deterioration. But even within one type of produce, how do you know that it's deteriorating 5 minutes faster than the other one, 10 minutes faster? Where is there a measure? So Tosfot says that you need to take a period of time that is sufficiently large to understand that. He says, the Mishnah gives you time periods, I think over a year. He says, maybe you have to wait a month or 2 months. And see, over the 2 months, is it deteriorating at the rate it would have done in a year? You have to look at it in a bigger picture. You can't look at it on a day-to-day basis and say it's rotting faster. because things move at different paces. You have to give it a certain amount of time to understand that it's rotting at a faster pace. You're not talking about anything that was subject to refrigeration, because there, nothing lasted more than 3 days with that refrigeration. So we're talking about dry goods that they stored, and they used to keep them for duration, produce or grains that are stored for the long term. And so then you have to look at the deterioration rate over a larger period of time to understand how fast it's happening. Anything that would spoil is unlikely to be deposited. They consumed them pretty quickly because they knew that there was spoilage, and it was very hard to store things over a long period of time because of the heat and because of the moisture that existed. Now Gemara says, Meitave. The fikach balabait ose otan truma umaser makom acher. Therefore, the Baal Bayit can make them in Truman and Maser on somewhere else. Wait a minute. Maybe they're deteriorating faster than the normal pace. And then if you have permission now to sell them out, why is it that you have a right to use them as Truman and Maser? Meaning that Rabbi Yochanan says, look, if it's deteriorating at a normal pace, then you have a machloket in the Mishnah as to what to do. If they're deteriorating at a faster than normal pace, then everybody agrees that you sell it. So that means that if it's deteriorating at a faster pace, you're going to sell it. We just brought a braita before that said that since we know that you're not allowed to sell it, you can use it for truma and maser. Well, how do you know for certain that he's not selling it? How do you know that the deterioration pace is normal? Maybe it's accelerated, and if that's the case, he sold it. So what can you rely on? So Gemara says, how can maybe maybe they were deteriorating at a faster pace, and he sold them. And now the person who thought he has Trumat HaMaserot over here is eating Tevel because he was never mafrish anything that was Trumat HaMaser. Mar says, the faster pace is not common. Things deteriorate at a normal rate. If they are deteriorating at a faster than normal rate, that's an unusual circumstance. And if it does happen, my, what would happen? You would sell it. Why don't we worry about the fact that the Baal Bayit already made them into Trumot Maserot, and then here, 2 months in, when you figure out that it's deteriorating at a faster normal pace, you sell it, but you're selling Trumot Maserot, unbeknownst to you, but you might be selling Trumot Maserot and not Tevel or not stuff that is mitukan. Mar says, kizma zavina nami, when he sells it also, the kohanim, bidmei truma mezvinin luhu. He sells it to kohanim for the value of truma. So they will treat it like truma misa fake, and he'll sell it at the value of truma. Now, that does bring up an interesting dynamic here, which is then, the consideration for selling it and monetizing it has to be taken in a different light. If you were selling it in the market, and you would realize the regular market price, then you can make the decision earlier to sell them out. Over here, where you're only going to garner the Dmei Truma, which is a significant discount, maybe you're willing to accept a larger rate of deterioration, because here where you're taking a discount, that means that you also have to consider that in the sale, or when you're going to sell it, that the deterioration rate may be a little bit more than normal, but if it's not more than the discount you would have to take for Truma, it may not be worth selling it. You have to consider that in the deterioration rate, meaning that now that you're taking a discount on the sale price, you have to consider that the rot or the deterioration must be faster than the differential in price. So now what Rabbi Yochanan says is, we have here a basic law, which is that if it's deteriorating at a regular rate, you have a machloket. Deteriorating at a faster than normal pace, everybody agrees you sell it. How do we deal with the problem that the possibility of either that he made it into Truma and Maser, or the other possibility, which is that it is already Trumot and Maserot. In terms of him making it into Trumot and Maserot, the Gemara answered, Lo Shchichi. And since it's not common, we're not going to worry about it. It's a chashash, but it's somewhat far-fetched. And therefore, we will assume that he didn't do it, or in a second we'll see that he did it already, and therefore when he sells it at the faster than the regular rate of deterioration, you don't have to worry about that, because I've given him enough time already to deal with it, or to make it into Trumot Maserot, and since it's not common, we're not going to worry about it. Number two is, what happens if it's already Trumot Maserot? That we deal with by having him sell it to a Kohen, B'dei Mei Truma. Gemara says, Ule Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchok Nami, Nezavinu L'Kohanim B'dei Truma. Wait a minute. According to Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchok, who says that the reason the Tanakama says that you don't sell it is because we're choshesh that he made it into trumot maserot. Why don't we use the same solution over there and say, yes, he can sell it. He just has to sell it to Kohanim b'dmei truma. Now again, you'd have to consider the discount in price to see whether it's worth it. But at least then there is a solution in you selling it. Mar says, b'hapligei. This is the machloket between Rabbi Yochanan Shita and Rav Nachman Yitzchak. The Rabbi Baruch Hanan, who says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, this din, savar yoter miktei chesronan lo shchiach. We just said this before, that he thinks that the higher pace of deterioration is a rare occurrence. V'chi mishtakach, and when it does happen, l'kamehu d'havi yoter miktei chesronan. It takes a while before the faster pace kicks in. So first of all, he says it's a rare occurrence. Number two is, he says that, even if it happens, it takes time for it to happen. So therefore, Yavilu balabai truma maser amakom acher mikamei davilu yoter miktei chesronan aviduhu. Already, the balabai did this before the time period where it starts to deteriorate faster, and he would have sold it. Hilkach. Therefore, ki havilu yoter miktei chesronan, when they're at a higher pace than normal, nazavino lekohanim b'dmei truma. We sell it off to the kohanim b'dmei truma. So basically, there's a number of assumptions here, but they all play into each other. One is that deteriorating at a faster rate takes time. It doesn't happen immediately. It's something that builds over time. It's a cumulative effect. It might even be logarithmic or multiplicative in the rotting. That's number one. Number two is, it's not common. Number three is, if he's going to make a truma maser, there's enough of a window of time that he would have done it already. So by the time you're coming to sell it, there's no way that the balim think that they can still use it for truma to maserot, because he realizes there's an elapsed time now, and he knows in that elapsed time there's a possibility of rotting. He won't know even whether to make it trumot to maserot anymore, how much is left to make trumot to maserot already. So therefore you can sell it, but you have to sell it as if it's truma, because the balim might have made it into trumot and maserot. On the other hand, Rav Nachman Yitzchak believes that that is a common occurrence, that deterioration happens. And when it happens immediately. It's immediately recognizable in the produce that they are deteriorating at a faster than normal pace. And then if you let him sell it, he's going to jump the gun and sell them early. He won't know that they already sold out. And he's eating tevel. So this is the key element that differentiates their opinions, which is Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak believes, first of all, this is a common occurrence, this deterioration. So it will happen more often than we would have thought. Number two is, even when it happens at a very quick pace, or happens soon after the deposit is made. And therefore, the sale is going to happen very quickly. If that's the case, then you run a risk that the balabayit thinks it's still around. And since he thinks it's still around, he's going to utilize it for trumot to maserot. Meantime, it's long gone. It has been sold already. Therefore, Rav Nachman Yitzchak does not offer you the opportunity to sell it to a kohen b'dmei truma, because we're afraid if you sell it, then the Baal HaBayit will mistakenly rely on it to use for trumot to maserot, or to make into trumot to maserot. So we tell you, don't touch it, don't sell it. And that's why we said before that Rav Nachman Yitzchak clearly argues on Rabbi Bar Chanan and Rabbi Yochanan, because even though they seemingly could fit together, this difference makes it that they cannot work together, or the fact that Rav Nachman Yitzchak doesn't allow you to sell it based on the Tanna Kamma, where Rabbi Bar Chanan and Rabbi Yochanan says you can sell it after a certain period of time or after the deterioration accelerates. Now, Tosafot already asks, how do you know this? It's not necessarily clear that you have to say there's a machloka between Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak and Rabbi Bar Chanan and Rabbi Yochanan. Because in the end, you could have reconciled their positions. The Gemara clearly sees that there's a difference, or that Rav Nachman Yitzchak wouldn't agree to the sale. How do they know that? So the Baal Yitzchak suppose says, V'iksha rivam mi dacha kol omar de Rav Nachman palik. Who forced the Gemara to say that Rav Nachman argues over here? So he says, V'teretz Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam answered, D'matznita mayri afilu pishtan u'peirot metukanim. Because our Mishnah is talking about a case of pishtan or peirot metukanim. So if the peirot are already had trumot to maserot taken off of them, or you're dealing with objects that don't require trumot to maserot, pishtan. Our Mishnah does not speak about what produce we're speaking about here. It doesn't have to be necessarily edible produce, number one. Number two is, there's no indication whether it is tevel or it's not tevel. We assume that it could be tevel. Therefore, Rav Nachman's, Bar Yitzchak's reasoning is somewhat limited, because his reason only applies to edible items, and number two only applies to items that Trumot and Masrot were not taken off of. If that's the case, then Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's reasoning is very limited. That means that he holds, like Rav Kahana, for the remainder of items. Why, by flax, can you not sell it? Well, according to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, his reason doesn't apply. That would indicate that the Tanakam would agree. But the Mishnah never says that. The Mishnah never differentiates in those cases. So it must be that he holds like Rav Kahana for that other piece. So what the Rabbeinu Tam basically says is, if you were not to say this in Rav Nachman Yitzchak, then Rav Nachman Yitzchak and Rav Kahana would end up being the exact same thing. Because Rav Nachman Yitzchak needs Rav Kahana for items that are not edible. He needs them for items that already have Trumot and Masrot taken off of them. Then when is his opinion manifest? His opinion is only manifest in the case of where you're talking about edible items that are tevel, and he's saying there that that's where the Tanakhama says don't sell it. So it must be that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's opinion is that you may not sell it in that case. And that's why the Gemara is compelled to say that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak argues on Rabbi Bar Chanan and Rabbi Yochanan, and that's what leads us down this path of suggesting Rav Nachman Yitzchak has this differentiated opinion, that he thinks deterioration happens more often than we would have thought. And when it does happen, it happens pretty quickly. And so because of that, we're not going to let you sell it, because of the risk that the Baal HaBayit is going to use it for Trumot Masrot. And that's the key differentiating element of Rav Nachman Yitzchak's opinion vis-a-vis Rav Kahana. A mafkid peirot etzel chavero. Person deposits fruits, produce with his friend, v'irkivu, and they start to rot. Yayin, wine, v'chmitz, and it turns into vinegar. Shemen, v'yivish, oil, and it went rancid. Dvash, v'yidvish. It's very difficult to understand here because honey in general does not go bad. And so what does it mean? V'yidvish. So one possibility is that it starts to get solid when it's left, although it can be reconstituted. It's much easier today where we have artificial means of creating the heat to do that, but maybe that's what it means. The Rashi indicates vidvish means that it loses its honey taste, meaning that the flavor, the honey flavor is lost, and then vichmitz, and it went bad because of that. The other possibility is that there were other items inside of the dvash that causes the problem for the dvash. Dvash acts as a preservative, but over a certain amount of time, it could be problematic. Now, that has to do with the concentration of sugar inside of the honey, which is the reason that bacteria fails to grow inside of honey, or the reason that it's a preservative is because of the concentration of sugar kills off any bacteria. Nobody, none of them are able to survive inside of the honey, and that's why it doesn't go bad. But in certain times when you take honey from the honeycomb, it has higher concentrations or lower concentrations of sugar. So it's usually when you get it at the tail end of taking out the honey, it has a lower concentration of sugar. So the possibility is that they got that type of honey that had the lower concentration of sugar, and that's what causes it to go bad or to rot, because it doesn't have the normal properties of honey. And so that's what we're talking about here, that dvash vidvish, that it went bad. Hareze lo yigabahen, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says you may not touch them, would make sense. The Tanakama of our Mishnah says similarly. Generally, Rabbi Meir is the Tanakama, so that would make sense. V'chamim omrim osilem takana. You fix them up, umochran bebeitin, and you sell them in beitin. The Gemara asks, what takana are you doing over here? Aren't you just selling them in beitin? What takana are you doing at this point? Ukshu mochran, when he sells them, mochran la'achirim. You have to sell them to third parties. He may not sell them to himself. Kiyotzebo, similar situations. Gabayt staka. The Gabayt staka was collecting cash on behalf of the aniim. Bizman shein lehem aniim. He doesn't have sufficient poor people to distribute all the funds that he has. Portin lacherim. He can consolidate them with others. Vein portin latzman. But he can't do it to himself. We were talking about the collection usually involved copper coins, smaller coins. And he wants to consolidate them onto silver coins. The reason being, as Rashi notes over here, that copper over time deteriorates and it loses its value. It's the smallest coinage. So in terms of collection, that's what they're getting. People are making small donations. And then when they give it out to the aniim, it's also helpful. But if you have a time period where you're going to have these coins and you're not going to be distributing them, then there's a value in consolidating them onto larger silver coins. The same thing happens with Meister Sheni and taking it up to Yerushalayim. So here, you want to consolidate them onto silver coins. You can do that with third parties. You cannot transact with yourself in order to consolidate them. Gabay Tamchui, the gabay of the food plate, which is they used to go around with the plate and collect food. Then, Bizman Shein Lehem Aniyim Lechaleik, again, if he has more food than Aniyim to distribute, Mochrin Lacherim, then he sells off the food to third parties. Vein Mochrin Latzman, you can't sell it to yourself. So now, in terms of just transacting with third parties versus transacting with themselves, there are two reasons for that. One of which is important, is Marit Ayin, which it just does looks bad, which is that you're transacting yourself. There's a suspicion that you're somehow benefiting from the staka or the tamchui, and for that reason, you're transacting with yourself. The other possibility is that it's a conflict of interest, which is that you have to monetize these items, and you have to do the best for the organization or the person that you're representing. On the other hand, if you're selling them to yourself, then in that situation, you want to also get the best price for yourself. So now you have a conflict of interest where you're representing both the buyer and the seller. So to avoid that conflict of interest, we say sell it to a third party, because that way the two parties are represented independently. You're still representing the organization. The buyer will represent himself, and that will lead to a fair negotiation. So we assume in that case you'll get fairer pricing because you're dealing with two parties rather than a single party, where that conflict of interest can lead to a possibility not only of Marat Ayin, but of real self-dealing, or as you said, putting his hand in the pot, because of the fact that he has his own negiyot in this. But once you deal with a third party, that helps to make it a more objective sale. Although, of course, you could have collusion, but we know that whenever there's one signature on the check, there's much more likelihood of fraud than when there are two signatures on the check. And when you have three, it's even harder. I mean, that the more people involved, the less likely there is of cheating, because it requires all the parties to buy in to doing something wrong. That's the one piece. The second piece is here that we have a machloket here between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to what to do. And the Gemara says here, Tani miyat, perot v'irkivu. What is the situation here? Here it says fruits that deteriorated. It doesn't tell you the pace of deterioration. It simply says fruits that deteriorated, you sell them. My love, afilu yeter migdei chesronan. Sounds like from here that even if they were deteriorating at a faster pace than normal, and yet Rabbi Meir still says, don't sell them. So that would upend what Rabbi Bar Chana, Rabbi Yochanan said, which is, even Rabbi Meir or the Tanakhama agrees in a case where there's a higher pace of deterioration that you could sell them. Over here from this bright, that sounds like it makes no statement about the pace of deterioration, and yet it still says, don't sell them. Or it says, lo, b'gdei chesronan. It's only at the normal pace. Gemara says, "Va'yayin v'chmitz shemen v'yivish dvash v'yivish d'yeter k'nei chisronan inhu." When you're talking about wine that is changing into vinegar, oil that went rancid, or honey that went bad, all of those are faster or a higher deterioration than you would have expected. So then, if that's the case, then we're talking about a case of higher than normal deterioration. So if I was to parallel this with peirot v'irkivu, I would assume that the fruits are also deteriorating at a faster pace than normal. Mar says, no, shiny honey. These are unusual. The came and the come. Because once they go, they go. In terms of the fruits, the rates of deterioration are affected by the circumstances surrounding them. But when you talk about wine that turns to vinegar, talk about shemen, oil that goes rancid, once they have reached that point where they're going bad, there's no question about the process of deterioration. Deterioration's happened, then they're done. Meaning that once wine turns into vinegar, the vinegar is not going to change at that point. That's already the bad wine. There's oil, once it goes rancid, it doesn't mean that it's going to go any more rancid than it is currently. And same thing with the dvash. So what he's saying is that once these items have crossed over that threshold where they've gone bad, there's nothing going to change in terms of the faster pace of deterioration or a lesser pace of deterioration. And that's why we say over there, don't sell them, because what's happened has happened, and your selling them is not going to prevent any more from happening. The wine's already vinegar. So now you can sell it as vinegar. But if you keep it for another 3 months, it's still going to be vinegar in 3 months, and you can sell it then, so there's no reason to sell it. So therefore, all these, even though when they happen, it's a faster than expected deterioration, once it's happened, then there's nothing more to do. I mean, there's no more faster than deterioration. Whereas, by the Perot and Hirkivu, it will make a difference. If the pace is accelerating, that means the losses will also accelerate. Stopping that is important because they affect the other fruits that are left behind. And therefore, the curve will start to accelerate in terms of deterioration. So that's what the Gemara is answering here is, no, we're talking about everything at a normal pace. So the fruits are deteriorating at a normal pace. These other items are at a normal pace. Wait, these other items, when this happens, are clearly at a faster pace. But the truth is, it's fast, and then it slows down. Meaning that once it happened already, they're in a category of normal deterioration now because nothing more will happen to them. And therefore, we could explain the Braita as being a case of normal deterioration, and it's not a refutation of the position of Rabbi Bachanan and Rabbi Yochanan. And now the Gemara says, Shemen v'ivish, dvash v'idvish, you have the oil that went rancid, you have honey that went bad, the maichazu. What exactly are you selling them for? Rabbi Meir says, don't sell them. Okay, the Chachamim say you do sell them. What exactly are you selling them for? Wine and vinegar, it's easy to understand what you're selling them for. Vinegar is utilized in the cooking process, in the food preparation process, in the dips, in salad dressings. I mean that there are things to do with vinegar that people will pay for it because it has utility. But what is rancid oil good for? And what is honey that went bad good for? Shem and Chazi LeGildai. The oil is good for the leather workers because they can put the oil to soften the leather. So they don't need edible oil, they just need the oil, period. So the rancid oil will work over here, even though the leather might not smell so good afterwards, but they still can use it in the softening process. Dvash, the honey that has gone bad, you can use it the Kedisha, the Gamle. Gemara in many places speaks about this being a salve for a wound on an animal. So on the back of the Gamal, you can put this as some salve over there that would help it to recover from the injury or the wound on the back of the animal, from its carrying heavy loads that have either rubbed up against it or caused some sort of damage to the animal. So therefore, it has a purpose. And there, it could be monetized, and there's value to it. Chamim omrim, oselem takana, umochran bebeitin. Chamim say you do something for them, and then you sell them in beitin. What is the takana that you're doing over here? My takanta avilu. What exactly are you doing, takana, and then selling them? You just should have said you sell them in beitin, because that stops the deterioration. But what about this takana? What is that? Amravashi the kankanim. That is to salvage the containers in which they are contained. But my kamiflege, what are they arguing about? Masavar the hefsid meruba chashashu, the hefsid muat lo chashashu. The question is, do they worry about large losses, but small losses they don't worry about? Omar savar afil the hefsid muat nami chashashu. And the other one says, no, that even for small losses, they worried about it. So over here, the small loss is the container in which the item is preserved. If the item is going bad or deteriorating inside of it, over time, it's not only going to affect the produce that's inside of it, it's also going to affect the utensils in which they are kept. So the question is it worth selling it to save the utensils? And so that's the question at hand here. The Chamisei Asula Takana. You made a Takana. Takana means we allow you to sell it to salvage the Kankanim, to salvage the utensils, because there's a value that you will save this individual by selling them off. So that value, which is a hefsed muat, it's a small in relationship to the actual produce that's inside of them, but still, maybe there's value in doing that. So the Chachamim say, yes, there is value in doing that, and therefore we want you to sell it off in order to salvage those utensils. On the other hand, the other opinions say that they only worry about hefsed meruba. They only worry about a case where there's heavy losses being sustained. Heavy losses means the produce itself is being lost, not to save the kankanim. So here, it would indicate that even if you were at a normal pace of deterioration, you might be willing to sell them in order to preserve the utensils, because even at the normal rate of deterioration, eventually it's going to ruin the kelim that they are in. So we allow you to sell it even at that pace. On the other hand, whether it's the chachamim of our Mishnah, or the opinions that believe you can only sell it, like Rabbi Barchan and Rabbi Yochanan, when there's a higher than normal pace of deterioration, maybe there is because in a normal circumstance, we're not going to ask you to save the kankanim. We're only going to ask you to save it when it's a case of large loss. Large loss meaning that the item itself, the produce itself, is going to be lost. And so there, we will let you sell it off because it's Yoter Mikdei Chesronan. But at a normal pace of deterioration, we're not going to let you sell it off because all that's doing is saving the utensils, and that's not a value that's worth saving. Now that is the view of Rashi, that this Braita is parallel to the Machloket that we saw in the Mishnah. On the other hand, the Ramban and the Rashba, who expounds on that position, believe that this Braita has nothing to do with our Mishnah, and the Machloket here, or the reasons why they're searching for a reason for their Machloket over here, as opposed to using what we already have from Rav Kahana, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, and the Mishnah, is because this case is completely different. And as the Rashba says over here, Uben lamar, uben lamar, lo shaycha milta bevat nitan klal. Da hocha lukuyama, kevin de hiv ishu veniftedu. Since the items here are completely lost, lekan the meymar she adam rotze bekav shalo, bezeh mishar peirot yafim. Why would a person want this item any more than nice fruits that are out there? I mean, the whole idea of adam rotze bekav shalo is in a case where the items are deteriorating or in a process of rotting. Over here, the items are gone. The wine is now vinegar. The shemen is rancid. The vash has gone bad. Over here, there's no concept of adam rotze bekav shalo yoter mitisha kabim shel chaveiro. And since the chashash of taking off truma is far-fetched, as the Balei Tosafot note, therefore we're not going to worry about that consideration as well. And if there's no quote-unquote hashavata beida being done here, then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel of the Mishnah said that the only reason to return them was because it's Hashavata Ve'edah LeBalim. Over here, you're not returning anything to them. You're not giving them anything more than they would have had if you just left it and handed it back to them. And therefore, I have to explain what the machloket between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is. So then, what is their machloket? Are we matriach, the individual, to sell off these peirot in order to salvage the value of the kankan? Rabbi Meir says, we're only choshesh the hefseid miruba. But over here, with that, all you're going to salvage is the kankanim, which is hefseid muat, that you shouldn't touch. On the other hand, according to the chachamim, since you can salvage the kankanim, why not at least save him that hefseid muat? And their machloket is, do we have an institution, the chachamim, to be matriach, the person who is the shomer over these items, to monetize the items in order to salvage the kankan? Because either way, whether he sells them or hands them back to the Baalim, they have the same toilet. As we already saw before, that there is value to the rancid shemen and there is value to the honey that went bad. But that could be realized now, or it could be realized once it's given back to the owners. Since, as we already established, the items here are stable, therefore there's no loss to the Baalim as far as the contents are concerned, only vis-a-vis the kankanim. So the only question is, are we matriach for you to sell it in order to salvage the value of the kankanim?
He should sell them in beitim because it's as if he's meshiva beidale balim.
Itmar. Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Yaakov Amar, Rabbi Yochanan, alochik Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. He says, alochik like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in this case. Rav Amar, Rav Nachman, alochik divrei chachamim. We have a member from Rabbi Yochanan that says, alochik like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And we have a memra in the name of Rav Nachman that the loch is like the chachamim. Va'amra Yehu Yochanan Chadazimna. How come over here we have Rabbi Abba Bar Yaakov bringing a memra in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that the loch is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? Don't we have another memra from Rabbi Yochanan which says, Amar Bar Barachan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Koma Kom Shishana Rabbi Shimon Gamliel B'Mishnatenu. Anytime Rabbi Shimon Gamliel appears in our Mishnah, Halacha Kamoto, the loch is like him. Chutz, with the exception of these three cases, which is Arev, Vitzidan, V'Raya Achrona. Again, the case Raya Achrona is in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's the second Mishnah that talks about a situation in which the Beit Din says, bring your last evidence. And the question of what do we allow in or what do we cut off? When do we allow you to reopen the case? So that second Mishnah over there, Raya Achrona, there, the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. In the case of Tzidan, which is in Masechet Gittin, which we discussed over there, there also, even though Rabbi Shimon Gamliel appears in the Mishnah, the Lach is not like him, and Arev, which is in Perek Get Pashut, in Baba Batra, again over there, with regards to a guarantor, the Lach is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So with the exception of those three cases, and it specifically, it seems like in a Mishnah, not necessarily in a Braita, where Rabbi Shimon Gamliel appears, the Lach is like him. So why does Rabbi Yochanan over here have to say a Lach like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? It's already captured by his general principle that the Lach is always like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Where it says, the Amorai Neinu Valibi Rabbi Yochanan, have two Amoraim, that are bringing memro to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Bar Chana brings one memro. His memro is a more general one. Rabbi Abba Bar Yabbi Yaakov doesn't have that one that Rabbi Bar Chana has. He has it specifically here that the lochas are Shimon Gamliel. So if Amoraim arguing within the position of Rabbi Yochanan as to what his statement is vis-a-vis Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, is it a general principle or is it a particular halacha like in this case? Now Gemara says, Umid Rabbi Shimon Gamliel nishma, from Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion, let us conclude, Demoridim Karov Ninichse Shavui. We would learn from that you're allowed to allow a relative to descend into the property of someone in captivity. Umid Rabbanan Nishma Dein Moridim Karov Ninichse Shavui. And from the Rabbanan, you could conclude that we do not allow relatives to enter into the property of someone in captivity. The truth is that logically you could understand the connection between the cases, although the cases are not exactly identical. What you have here is the possibility of deterioration. And in order to stop that deterioration, we're going to allow someone to intervene. So our Mishnah is a case where you have the fruits or the produce that's being deposited that's deteriorating. The question is, do we allow you to intervene in order to stop that deterioration? Similarly over here, you have a field that is laying fallow. If you let the field lay fallow, it will deteriorate, both in terms of weeds growing there, in terms of the nutrients of the field that it doesn't have, fertilizer that's being put in there. There are reasons to stop the deterioration and to preserve the value of the field. So what we're going to do is allow someone to go and work the field in order to keep it productive and active, the field. Now, who we're going to allow to do that? Again, here it's just logical that you take the relative that is the closest kin to the person in captivity. The reason being is because, we're going to see in a second, there's uncertainty as to the fate of this captive. So there are two possibilities. Either the captive comes back and we preserve the property for him, or the captive doesn't come back and now the closest of kin is the Yoresh. So for that reason, it makes sense to put the closest of kin in the property to work it because Miman of Shach, it's a value, meaning that either he will be his in the end, or he will give it back to his relative after having preserved it. What the Gemara is doing now is saying that our Mishnah, which speaks about a similar genre of case, maybe that should be reflective or should be extrapolated to this din here with a karov and ichse shavui. That's what the Gemara said. From Rabbi Shimon Gamliel allows you to intervene and sell the stuff. We would also allow a karov to enter in and work the field to preserve the integrity or the value of the field. Whereas the chamim who don't allow you to intervene with the fruits or the produce, they also here would not let you intervene. Now, it's slightly different because of the reasoning behind them. I mean, that the reasoning of maybe you'll make them into trumot or masrot, the reasoning of a person would say, "Bekav shelo yoter me tishakabim shel chavero," those are all unique items that make sense when you're talking about produce. When you're talking about land, that reasoning or those reasonings don't necessarily come up. The guy's not making trumot masrot out of his land. He's not selling the land here. He's simply working the land. So it still will be there. It's not Motzei Adam Bekav Shelo Meiter Mitisha Kabim Shel Chaveiro. So you have to say that it's not an exact parallel between the cases. It's generally a framework which says, do we intervene in losses or do we not intervene in losses? And from that, I want to extrapolate to this case. And the Gemara says, well, it's not muchbach, because you could say here, umimai, how do you know that's the case? Over here, the problem is that, as we just noted, the principal amount by the fruits and vegetables or the produce is deteriorating to the point where it won't exist anymore. But by the case of land, land doesn't disappear. So yeah, it might go down in value a little bit. It might not be worth, but the land itself will still be there. It's not going anywhere. And therefore, maybe you should just leave it alone. This is what I noted to you before. The reasoning behind the Rabbanon's position is premised on Rav Kahana or Rav Nachman Vayitzchak, both of which are uniquely relevant when you're speaking about produce. But when you're speaking about land, of Ahotam, Hachanami Demoridin, by land, maybe that's not a reason to stop you from going down to the land, because by land you have neither of those kashashot. So maybe you should allow the person to work it. Gemara says, Lememra the trait Ameninu. So now you're saying that they're really two different issues. We can halachically separate these issues. And basically what you could say is that you can paskin like one way in this case and like the other way in the other case.
V'amar Rabbi Yehuda, my Shmuel, Lachik Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Didn't Shmuel say, Rabbi Yehuda saying the name of Shmuel that the Lachik is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. V'amar Shmuel, Moridin Karol, the next day Shavuot. And Shmuel also paskins that you allow a Karol to enter into the properties of a captive. La Mishum Dechad Taimahu. Isn't the reason that Shmuel paskin the Lachik like both of these cases is because there's one reason behind them? Now even this is a little bit of a stretch, because Shmuel could have made, which he does, makes two independent statements about the halacha is like this and like this. That just might be because he thinks independently the halacha is like each one of these cases. There's nothing here that compels you to say that it must be the same case. The Gemara is speculating that Shmuel's conclusion that the halacha is like Shimon Gamliel, and the fact that he says that the halacha by Karov is this way, that there must be some correlation between them. And the Gemara in the end says, well, Trei Tami Ninu, there are two different reasons behind them. And Hachanami Mistava, that makes sense, because now we're going to find that Amar Rav Rova, Amar Rav Nachman, who we quoted before, Halacha Kedivrei Chachamim. Rav Nachman believes that the Halacha is like the Chachamim in the Mishnah. V'Amar Rav Nachman, Moridin Karov, Nechsei Shavuot. Yet on the other hand, he says that you do have a right to put a Karov into the property of a captive. So you see that Rav Nachman has opposing conclusions over here, and yet he still is able to reconcile that and say that Moridin Karov the next say Shavuot, but he does not allow you to sell off the Pikadon that is in your possession. El Shvamina, Trei Tamei Ninu. It's clear here that you can separate between these Machlokot. They're not interdependent. They are independent. And therefore you could paskin differently in each case. Shvamina. So that would be the conclusion. Itmar. So now we're going to discuss this issue of Shavuot Shinishba. You have a person that is taken into captivity. Rav Amar Ein Moridim Karov Nechasav. Rav says we don't allow the relative to enter into the property. Shmuel Amar Moridim Karov Nechasav. Shmuel says you're allowed to do this, and that's what we just saw before, that Shmuel paskins this way. Bishashamobo Shemate. If we hear that he died, Kuli Amalo Pligi De Moridin. Everybody agrees that you allow him to go in there, because if he passed away, and we're hearing that information now, Tosafot says it's not we heard it from two Edim. If we heard it from two Edim, that's real testimony. The point is here, either we heard it from a woman, we heard it from a P.A. Dechad, we heard it in a way that is not considered to be full-fledged testimony. It's rumors, it's hearsay. We have information, but it's not evidentiary information. You can rely on that in order to allow the person to go down, because here, if you're talking about captives in their day, the likelihood of them returning alive was not so high. And already you're having rumors that he died, you put those together, even Rav will agree, kedai to allow the karov to go down, because on the rov, he's going to end up inheriting the land anyway. Ki plige, b'shlosha mo bo shemet. In the case where we have no information, we know he's in captivity, have no other information. Rav amarin moridim, we don't allow to do it, dilma mafsidu. Because when he goes there, the karov has in mind two things. One possibility is that the land will be his in the end. The other possibility is that the owner will show up again and take it back. So what is he going to do? He says, look, I have a short time in this field. I'm going to try to maximize what I can take out of this field before the guy comes back and takes his land back. So he's going to either overwork the land, invest very little in the land, so that he gets the most out for the least amount of money, because he's afraid the guy's going to show up. Shmuel Amar Moridin. Shmuel says we do. Kevin Damar Mar, something that we're going to see later on. Shamin and Lahu Kiaris. The individual, even if he gets kicked off the land, will get the value that he invested here as if he's a sharecropper. So therefore, Lo Mafsidu, he's not going to destroy them or ruin them because it's not to his advantage. If the owner shows up, we will give him a percentage of the land as if he was a sharecropper. If the owner doesn't show up, he's going to inherit it. So what Shmuel says is that this individual has an incentive to invest in the land, because on one possibility, it's going to be his. The other possibility, it's not going to be his, and he's going to lose out, but he won't lose out, because he's going to get a percentage of the output of the land, so it's worthwhile for him to invest in the land. Again, both Rav and Shmuel's positions are true to an extent. The question is which one you put more emphasis on. Even if you pay him out as an aris, it still may not say to invest for the long term. It may say invest for the short term. Whereas, again, if you are giving him a piece of the sharecropper and he might inherit it, those two together might convince him to do a little more investing. So they're both true. The question is, which do you put more emphasis on? The Pasuk says in Shmot that if you don't treat the Yatom ve'almanah properly, it says, v'charapi, I'm going to get angry, and I'm going to kill you.
Well, what happens if you kill an individual? His wife is a widow, and his children are yitomim. That's the definition of a yitom in the Torah, is if the father is missing. So then why does the pasuk continue and say, v'ayunishechem amanot, uvneichem yitomim? Why does he have to tell you that? Milamed, that's an additional punishment. The women want to get married, and they are, in a sense, agunot. They can't get married because they don't have information. The children want to go and take over the estate of their father, and we don't let them do that. So the punishment is not only that the cherev, that you will be killed, or that you'll be taken into captivity, the additional punishment is, even when you're dead, the woman will be left as a in limbo state, in aguna, where she can't get married, and the children will be in that same position in regards to the possessions of their father. The question then is, it seems from this brayta that you're not allowed to allow the children when you have a safek into the property. Obviously, the children are the closest of kin here, and they should be allowed in based on Shmuel's statement. How come the brayta indicates otherwise? So Amarova, Leireid Vilimkor, Tnan. That brayta is speaking about allowing them to go in and sell the property. There's a difference between allowing them to go in and work the fields versus allowing them to go in and sell or monetize the items. So in terms of allowing them to work the field, that's the din of Shmuel. In terms of allowing them to go in and then sell off the property, that's the din we just saw from Elazar, that we won't let them in to do that because that has a certain amount of finality to it. That means that they're selling out the property and we're not even clear or certain that it's theirs. At least if the property's around, it's not walking away. They sell it for money, then that money could disappear anytime. If the captive shows up, the money could be gone. So that we're not going to allow. Havuvda ben Arda. There was a case in Arda. Upashta Rav Sheshet meha matnita. And Rav Sheshet came to the conclusion from this braita, meaning that you're not allowed to allow a karov to enter into the property of a shavuot. Amalei Rav Amram dima l'reid v'lim kortznan. So Rav Amram makes the suggestion that Rava does in explaining the braita and says, maybe that braita is speaking not allowing him to sell it, but maybe he is allowed to go down and work it. Amalei dima mipum paditat. Rav Sheshet's in Arda, and he's giving this psak halacha, and Rav Amram is challenging it by saying maybe there's a different explanation for the braita, and your conclusion is incorrect. Rav Sheshet from Arda says back to Rav Amram, maybe you're from Pupadita. De mailin pila bekupa de machta. That they stick an elephant through the eye of a needle, or the elephant through the point of the needle. Basically, they try to come up with these very difficult solutions to problems. That's not the simplest reading of the braita. The simplest reading of the braita is you're not allowed to allow the children to go down. You're making this ukimta, that it's a case where they want to sell it, not that where they want to work it. He says you're stuffing an explanation into the braita to avoid a problem. And so that's what he's saying. You and Pupadita, you guys come up with all this fancy footwork to try to avoid the problem. Why don't you just look at the simple interpretation? That explanation is difficult because of this. Va dumyin nishotehem uvneem tani. That the punishment will be not only that you'll be in captivity and killed, but that your widows will be left in limbo and the children left in limbo. It compares the women to the children. Mahatam klalo, avachanami klalo. When we say that the woman is an aguna, that doesn't mean a partial aguna. It means a full-fledged aguna. She can't get married, period. So too, when you think about the children going down to the field, they can't go down to the field, period. And so if you parallel them, then the explanation of the braita would be that you're not allowed to down there. Forget about for selling, for anything, you're not allowed to go down there. And therefore, Rav Sheshet believed that Rav Amram Zukimto, or Rava's explanation of the braita, was incorrect, or not a plausible way to explain it because of the fact that the Nashim and the Banim are compared to each other in the braita. But that also would then upend Shmuel's position, because then seemingly you have a braita that argues on Shmuel's position. Now Gemara says, Umaridim karov nixei shavoi tanaehi. The fact that whether you're allowed to allow a karov to descend into the property of a captive actually is not only a machloket amoraim, Rav and Shmuel, it's also a machloket tanaim. The Tanya, we have a braita. Hayored nixei shavoi in motzino to miyado. Person who goes down to the property of a captive, we don't take it away from him. Vlood, not only ela filu shama, shememash mashim ubayim, and if he hears that the captive's coming back, that he's been freed and he's coming back, v'kadam etalash v'achal, and he runs down to the field and he starts picking away and eating away, harizez zariz v'niskar. This guy was quick, and he benefited from being quick. He gets to eat or take whatever is there. Ve'elu'ein nechsei shvuyin. What is classified as the property of a shavuy? Reishay aviv, or achiv, or echad min amorishim. If there was his father, his brothers, or one of those people that would grant him inheritance, halchulayam lemidinat hayam, and they went overseas. Visham'u behen shemait, and then they hear that he passed away. So this is the case that we said before, that Kuli Alma agrees that you're allowed to descend into the property because there are rumors or partial evidence of them dying. Hayoreid lenichsei nitushin, if the person descends into property that are nitushim, motzino tomiyado, then we remove him from the property. Ve'eluhei nichsei nitushim, what is designed as nitushim? Harei she'ya aviv o achiv o echad min amorishim, halchulayam lemidinat hayam, somebody who would grant him inheritance goes overseas, ve'lo shambu mehem shemeit, and they don't get information that he had passed away. So nichsei shvuyim are a case where the person's in captivity, and we also have information that he possibly passed away. The case of nichsei nitushim is a scenario in which we know he's overseas, and maybe even we know that he's in captivity, but we have no information about the fact that he passed away. So in that case, the Tanakhama or the Chachamim say, you're not allowed to send to the property, or we'll remove you from the property, we don't allow you there in there at all. V'amar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Shemuel says, Shamati shenitushim kishvuim. I heard that the nechasim of a natush has the same din as a neches of a shavuy, which means that even in this scenario, we allow the karov to go down and work the field. But, are you ready? The nechsei ritushin motzin oto miyado. But if he goes down to the property that's ritush, then we take it out of his hands. Ve'elohen nechsei ritushin. What's the definition of nechsei ritushin? Harei she'ya aviv o achiv o echad min ha'morishin. Kan, v'eni yodeh le'echan alchu. They were here just a while ago, and then they took off on a trip, and you have no idea where they went. So in that case, not only are you missing the information that they passed away, you're not even certain as to where they went, or whether they were taken to captivity, or if they're far away or not. So you have three levels of property and information. You have property of a shavuy, where we know for sure that he's in captivity, and we have rumors or some sort of evidence that he passed away. You have the nitushim, which are, as we know that he's overseas, we know that he was taken into captivity, but we have no idea as to his fate. And then you have the ritushim, which is, we don't know anything, basically. We know that he disappeared from town, but we have no idea why, where he went, and what has happened to him. So, in the first case, everybody agrees, you can go down into the property, and you can work it, and we won't take it away from him, and even if he hears the guy's coming back, he can take whatever he can grab his, get his hands on, before the guy shows up. In the second case, we have machloket, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim, as to whether you're allowed to descend into the property. That will be the machloket Tanaim that we're looking for, which is that you have the property of a shavuy, but we don't know any information about him. That's where Rav and Shmuel argued. That's where the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel argued. Then we have the final case, which is the case of property where we don't know any information. There, everyone agrees you can't descend into the property. Even Rabbi Shimon Gamliel agrees that there, you have no rights to go into the property. So now it raises a number of questions. First of all, if you do have a machloket Tanaim, why in Rav and Shmuel stating their opinions as their own opinions? They should either say halacha ke Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which would be what Shmuel would say, and Rav would say halacha ke Chachamim. So Tosafot asks that question and suggests either Rav and Shmuel were not aware of this Braita, or even if they were aware of the Braita came in different forms. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim's positions got mixed up. So if they said halacha like one of them, it would have been clear what they meant. So therefore they just stated their position without saying halacha ke. So that's one thing. The second thing is the Gemara before indicated to us that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, even though in his opinion in our Mishnah is that you're allowed to sell off the fruits, as far as a shavuy is concerned, we don't know what he thinks. He might think that you can't allow a karov to go down to the property. He might think a karov doesn't go down to the property. Wait a minute. The Braita tells you exactly what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion is. So again, Tosafot suggests that either the Gemara was not aware of the Braita, and therefore they're speculating about Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion is, or you have to suggest that the Gemara back there was just saying that it's not muchrach to connect the two machlokot. Doesn't mean that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel doesn't have this opinion. It's just that you can show that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel could have just as easily had the other opinion. The fact that his opinion is consistent is fine, but that does not prove to you that the two are connected. It just proves to you that his opinion is the same in those cases. Doesn't prove you they're connected. And that's what the Gemara before was doing, is trying to say, even according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel of our Mishnah, you could hold like the Chachamim or Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in the Braita. It happens to be And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel himself is consistent in all cases, allows you to go in and save the property. We're going to stop here on the last line of Lamed Chet Amud Bet, and tomorrow we'll go into the definitions of Ritushim, Nitushim, and from there go into the Gemara's discussion of this Braita.